Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
You know, most of the decision making and all that's, you know, done by the time we get to the draft. Then it's just a matter of, hey, how does it fall? We've been on the same page for 13 years now, 14 years, whatever it is. So it'll work smoothly.
Good morning, Acadiana. Welcome to RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call today, as always, Arco Equipment Hotline. Just pick up the phone, dial 337-706-0111. The one and only Cody Schutz will be manning the ones and twos. And if you're nice to him, Acadiana, he may let you get through onto the air. But Cody has high standards. Just letting you know. So don't be trying to come up with that BS game.
Tough call screening Tuesday.
Oh, tough call screening Tuesday has returned. We got a jam-packed show for you, as always. Coming up this hour, we'll have the longtime head softball coach at Beauchamp High School. The Gators have punched their ticket to the state semifinals on Friday for the first time in a generation.
All-name team, by the way.
Thad Dickey. Awesome.
That is all-world name team, Thad Dickey. That's good stuff.
We will also be talking to our good friend in the second hour, Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. It is draft week, obviously. We'll also have a conversation I had yesterday with our friend Jerry Glasgow, the UL head softball coach. And we'll have live in studio in the third hour, Church Point head softball coach Michael Hardy, former assistant at UL. He has guided Church Point to the state semifinals for the first time since like 1994. So, why we got so much softball for you? Because it's the state tournament this week. That's right. They're in lovely Sulphur. Plus, much, much more. But we're going to start off with...
I can hook you up with that Catholic Appointed P head coach if you want, Raymond.
Oh, there it is. There it is. That insider knowledge.
I laughed yesterday with the wife. I told her, I was like, yeah, did you know that Catholic made it all the way to, like, Sulphur and softball again this year? I was like, because I learned that yesterday. I had no idea. Although, I do want to shout out to New Roads holding it down in Pointe-Coupee Parish there in the 1A softball game. I believe 2 years ago, Catholic won the state championship. Last year, False River won the state championship. This year, Catholic's back there again. So, you know, New Roads in the 1A softball game holding it down, but LCA going to try to throw a wrench in the plans. We'll see.
That's right. LCA is an ascending team, an emerging power.
Right. Trying to maybe trying to dethrone I guess over the last 3 years, the power of 1A softball in the state.
There we go.
You forgot one thing that is, though, this week. Never forget. No. Avenge the fallen, Raymond. Avenge the fallen.
What is also the tagline?
Well, it's Avengers Endgame. Yeah. Avenge the Fallen.
Avenge the Fallen. I will not be avenging the falling at the cinema over the weekend because I am not going to that bad boy on opening weekend.
I'm ready. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna wear my helmet. I'm gonna be throwing elbows and kneeing people, and you know it's gonna be all right. We're gonna get there. Although, to be honest, a lot of that rigmarole for a good word here at 6:10 in the morning. To avoid a lot of that now is pretty easy because most theaters, especially in Baton Rouge, have reserved seating.
Yeah, that's the
so
new thing
that
to help
that
with
totally
that.
Helps. There's no more like run, bum rush the door, and like go wait in line for an hour. That was always stupid to me in the first place. But yeah, so that a lot of that is avoided.
I am just
it's still
an
gonna
old
be
man.
Crazy. It's still gonna be crazy.
I'm just an old man because I don't like going to a packed theater because everyone wants to talk.
It's very true. You're not wrong.
And I'm like, I'm an old cranky man. Like I like having my setup in my house. And if, you know, if my daughter gets a little too loud, I'll be like, hey, can you just go play in your room?
Yeah. Well, see me, I'm like, go outside.
Go kick rocks.
Right. But no, so that should be great this weekend. I'll probably try to catch a like early afternoon matinee on Saturday, maybe avoid some of the crazy crowd. Then there'll be an LSU baseball game I will want to watch as well.
So there you go. Cody Schutz already got his weekend planned out.
I know it's Tuesday, right? You can tell it's Avengers week.
In addition to it being Avengers week and the weekend for the state softball tournament where champions will be crowned, it's also NFL draft week. Thursday will be the first round, Friday, second and third round, and then Saturday it will wrap up with rounds 4 through 7. That clip that you heard coming in here to the show was, of course, of Mickey Loomis talking about how him and longtime head coach Sean Payton are always kind of in lockstep when it comes to the draft. And that seems to be the case because the two of them are always usually on the same page of what they want to do. They're also traditionally very aggressive. You know, we've talked about this before on the program where they usually do not stand pat. They usually are in lockstep with one another. Hey, we're going to trade up. Yes, sacrifice that future first-round draft pick because I want to trade up to get Mark Ingram, or I want to trade up to get Marcus Davenport, or I want to trade up to get Alvin Kamara. They're always kind of in the same thing, and that's only strengthened with Jeff Ireland. I think the addition of Jeff Ireland has made them better talent evaluators, and that's why those drafts have seemingly popped, so to speak, since Jeff Ireland has joined the front office with Mickey Loomis and longtime head coach Sean Payton. Now, to that, whether or not the Saints will be trading up, trading that future 2020 pick, or possibly trading Andrus Peat to get multiple picks, maybe with the Oakland Raiders. We've talked to our boy Barry Hurstis about this before. Mickey Loomis says they may just stand pat there, right there at 62 in the second round.
I think our view is it's a fairly deep draft, and we're pretty confident that we're going to get a good player at 62, yes.
Now, could that be a smoke screen? Because that didn't sound like
listen,
a whole lot of confidence.
Listen again, Raymond.
I think our view is it's a fairly deep draft, and we're pretty confident that we're going to get a good player at 62, yes.
That tells me they plan on trading up into either higher in the second round or into the first round, but not get rid of their second round pick.
That is
correct. They plan on making a pick at 62, but it doesn't sound like that's going to be their first pick in the draft.
No, it doesn't. Because here's the thing. They could get a good player at 62, but there's certain guys that a lot of people have projected them taking, whether it's the wide receiver out of Ohio State, whether it is the pass rusher at Louisiana Tech, Ferguson at a La Tech.
Saints
all
don't take
guys,
Ohio State players, Raymond. We know this. So that guy's got no shot of making the team.
The backup long snapper for Ohio State the last 4 years has a chance to make the Saints roster. Whether it's Ferguson out of La Tech, a lot of those guys are projected to be gone by 62, right? So I agree with you. I think they're going to make some type of move. Now, could it be just a mid move? Do they get themselves in the first round on Thursday night? I don't think so. I think you're going to see them, Cody. I think your instinct's right. I think they're going to trade up and get another pick in the second round. This is probably maybe where the Andrus Peat trade could benefit them, where they could trade him to the Raiders, who have multiple picks. I think the second most picks of any team in this year's draft. The Saints are looking to get another second and possibly a third. They're looking to be players on day two. And if you're drafting guys in the second and third round, those are guys that are going to be automatically, more than likely, on your two deep or a possible starter, or at least getting a lot of playing time. and that's where you want to add depth. So do you trade the farm to get that one player, or do you trade a player to pick up multiple picks, and that way you can add 3 to 4 players? That's kind of the mindset here that I think Mickey Loomis and the front office are going to take. But even though they've done it in the past, getting Mark Ingram, getting Brandon Cooks, getting Marcus Davenport, getting Alvin Kamara, they've always found a way to trade up. 3 of those 4 guys were taken in the first round. Mickey Loomis says it's fairly difficult to do that.
You know, we'll see when we get there, but it's pretty hard to go from 62 into the first round, you know, but we'll see what happens.
I love how he couldn't contain his laughter there.
Almost like he expected everyone else to laugh with him. Like when he said that, like, oh, no, it's going to be pretty tough for us to move into the first round. no one else laughed.
Okay. No,
I thought it was funny.
No, that's not going to be an issue whatsoever. That's not going to be an issue for us. An issue. It's not going to be an issue for us whatsoever.
Again, if his Mickey Loomis's press conference was well thought out and his answers,
nothing Mickey says is off the cuff.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's my point. Like,
I'm sorry.
If it's well thought out and it is. He understands the answers to questions he's already given when he's giving another answer, so he doesn't contradict himself just outrightly like that, which Mickey Loomis is not one to do. He understands that he said just a few minutes before that, oh, no, we're probably going to be right here at 62. And then they ask him a question a little later. Of course he's going to say, like, well, no, it's going to be pretty tough for us to get out of 60. He's just continuing the narrative that he doesn't expect anyone to believe, but
that press conference, listening to yesterday and hearing the clips again this morning, that just tells me everything I need to know.
Right.
That there's no way in hell that Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, and Sean Payton are going to stand put and just have the one pick at 62.
They're going
for
to
this weekend for the first three rounds. Not going to happen.
We'll hear stories that they at least tried. If for some reason the Saints end up, you don't see any moves, nothing happens, or maybe it's only just a couple of spots they move up or something in the second round.
Don't be surprised if they give up a third in 2020 to move up in this year's second round. If that's the only thing that they do,
right?
They're not going. Their first draft pick will not be at 62. They will move up in the second round. That they may give up that 62 pick and a future third to move up 10 spots. That could be all it is. And you're like, that's. But there'll be a guy that they'll see and they'll be like, we need him. That guy can help us win the Super Bowl. Boom. And they'll pull the trigger in a heartbeat right to make that happen.
I'd just like to add the caveat that if the Saints do pick at 62 and only at, say, our first at 62, then it's because it probably won't be because they just decided this is good for us. They made calls. They did what they tried to make moves. And I mean, sometimes the other team just says, no, we're good.
But I'd say that's like a 99% chance that that won't happen.
I don't know. They see how well things have worked out for the Saints maybe recently, and they say the Saints are sniffing around this guy. Maybe I'll just take this guy.
Yeah, but Mickey and Jeff are smart enough where they can make that.
That's where I can't.
And they can always be like, oh, yeah, we're really high on this guy. And some team drafts them, and they're like,
jabroni.
Thank you, rookie GM.
Eating out of the palm of my hand.
When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll have Thad Dickey, longtime head softball coach at Beauchamp High School. His team is going to Sulphur to play in the state semifinals this Friday. We'll talk to him about finally breaking through right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parse III, and we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also being simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium. Right now it's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our first guest of the day. He's currently in his 18th season as the head softball coach at Beauchamp High School. After reaching the state quarterfinals 3 times previously, the Gators finally broke through this season and have reached the semifinals for the first time in program history. His team went 18-4 during the regular season, took out South Lafourche in the first round, Neville in the second round, and then edged Franklinton in the state quarterfinals. They will take on number 9, Buckeye, this Friday on Field 13 at Frash Park at 1:30. It's our privilege to welcome on Thad Dickey. Coach, how are you this morning, brother?
Hi, I appreciate you having us on. Thank you so much. I'm doing great.
Well, first of all, Coach, let's start off with how does it feel, man, to have you and your girls break through like you did? I know it's the different playoff format where the quarterfinals are no longer in Sulphur. So to get to Sulphur, you have to at least make the semis this year. How does it feel to finally kind of get over that hump and make it to the state semifinals?
It's a great feeling. I have an assistant coach who's been begging to get there for years, and I keep telling him, I say, it's not our time, it's not our time. And all of a sudden, these girls start proving us wrong and proving everyone wrong. And, man, it's a thrill. We, you know, the kids work so hard, and they do everything that we ask for them to do. And it's a blessing that we have this opportunity to get there.
Coach, you know, you've been doing this quite a long time. You know, before you got at Beauchamp and took over the softball program, I know a lot of people know this. You also were the head baseball coach, and you also coached the softball program there at Opelousas Catholic. You got to the state quarterfinals in each sport. But for you personally, what does it mean now to, after all these years, two-plus decades, that, you know, you're only two wins away from possibly bringing home a state championship?
Well, it's a dream come true. You know, it's been a long time coming. I keep telling my wife, I said, it's hard to believe that we actually have an opportunity now. Because, you know, in our profession, we have to give it to all the girls, the kids that we coach. You know, it's up to them if they're going to perform or not. And it's amazing how we have to live and die by, you know, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids making the right decisions and doing all the things that we ask for them to do. And to get this opportunity to finally get there, it's a joy for me. I'm looking forward to it. There's no game that really scares me. It's just, we know we just have to go out and play. And I keep telling my kids, it's just another game. Let's just go out and play, enjoy it, embrace it. Believe in ourselves. You know, we've been basically living on a philosophy all year: believe, 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 and that's kind of what we've kind of been hanging on to this season.
We're currently talking to Thad Dickey, the longtime head softball coach at Beauchamp High School. Coach, what's the biggest difference for you when you first got to Beauchamp 18 years ago till now with this program?
The kids didn't believe that they could win. They've always been in the state playoffs. Speaking of Beauchamp, the school is right at 30 years old. They've been in the state playoffs every single year, but they never was able to get over the hump. And, you know, I came in on the first day. I told them, we will be STM. We will be district champs. The very first meeting I had with them. And they kind of bought into it, and it's been ongoing the last few years. You know, we look back, and the kids say, yeah, we remember that first day that you talked to us and how you made us believe in ourselves and believe in the program. And I keep telling the kids, it's y'all. It's the girls that come through the program year after year after year that, you know, needs to buy into it and do all the little things. And, you know, we're not going to be the most talented team. We're not going to be the biggest, the strongest. We're a country school where girls show up in the past on horses to get to practice just because they know we have to come out every single day and prepare.
Time out, Coach.
You heard me right.
So you just said. Now I'm familiar with Beauchamp. My wife graduated from Beauchamp, so as you know this, you and I have known each other for a long time.
Right.
So you have girls that come out for practice over the years that have come on horseback.
I sure have. We have, and I don't know if I should give you the names, but yeah, they're country kids. They didn't have a car. Their rides weren't there, so they packed up their horses and got over to the field and tied up their horses in the practice field and came to practice in their boots and took them off and got their cleats on, and after practice got their boots back on and saddled up and went home. You heard me right.
Coach, let's talk a little bit about this year's ball club. Like I said, you went 18-4 during the regular season, terrific overall record, and then you got your three playoff victories. What's a little bit? Tell us a little bit about this year's team. What's this year's team's identity?
We're young. We don't have a lot of team experience working together. We have only four seniors. Three of them start. I have two juniors and the rest sophomores. But it's the younger kids that stepped in this year that's making a big difference. My sophomores, they're playing. It's probably the strength of our team. If you had to say which group, they've got a lot of talent. It's just new to them. You look at the seniors, they've played for the last 3 years. They bring experience, I guess you can say, to the field. They're not outgoing leaders. They're going to speak in the clubhouse. They'll communicate on the field, but they're not that outside leader where they're going to demand all the respect that should come as a senior. So we're young. I really think this year we're playing great. I think we're ahead of where we should be. When the season first started, I told all my coaches and the kids, I said, you know, if the end of the season and we play 30 games, then I'm thinking 500, maybe a little more than 500, reaching the playoffs and just see what happens. Just because I didn't know their chemistry and how it was going to work this year. It's new every single year. And being so young, you know, I didn't know if the stage would be too big for the young kids, and it hasn't. They've performed. They've gone out every single day, no complaining. They go to work every day. They practice. They do every little thing that we ask for, and it's truly great to see it all coming together.
Coach, appreciate you making the time for us early this morning. I know you can gearing up for school today, but I want to congratulations on you getting to the state semifinals, and best of luck to you and to the Gators this Friday there at Frash Park.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Coach. That's longtime Beauchamp head softball coach Thad Dickey. His Gators are playing in the state semifinals, Class 4A, this Friday, 1:30 at Frash Park, Field 13. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, a little LSU baseball talk right here on 103.7 The Game.
The 0-2 pitch to Smith. Slam down the line. This one will drop in. Fair ball in right field. Into the corner. Around second is Bianco. They're going to wave him in. Smith around second. He'll pull up there. There'll be no throw home. And an RBI double from Josh Smith. His second double in as many at bats. And it's 4-0 Tigers.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. We just wrapped up a terrific interview with Thad Dickey, longtime head softball coach there at Beauchamp High School. Learned something new. I've known Coach Dickey for a long time. I did not realize that he's had players over the years come to practice on horseback, which we're starting off the day right. But
I feel like I should do something with that information. Like I have no idea what, but I feel like that's a nice little piece of
that should be information that is funneled out to media members prior to their game, anytime they're playing a big game, because I think that would be intimidating for the other team. They're like, oh, there's all these girls, and they're all playing softball, and then, you know, how great would it be if they just showed up in Sulphur on horseback?
It's a little crazy that Devin White didn't go to Beauchamp.
It's exactly correct. But LSU baseball returns to the diamond tonight for one of their final midweek contests. They only have three of those remaining. Lamar this week, and then it's La Tech, and then after that, UNO. So they're going to be wrapping up their midweek contest here. LSU is going to be taking on a struggling Lamar Cardinals team.
Lamar!
Out of the Southland Conference. LSU, who is now number 9 in the country, the Fighting Tigers are 26-15 overall after taking 2 of 3 from Florida over the weekend. Lamar comes into Alex Box Stadium 14-26.
They're still coached by Will Davis. Wasn't he the head coach there?
At one time.
Yeah, I don't know if I know, because that's how this whole that's how this whole series started. Because Will Davis went over there.
He's still coaching there.
Yeah, there it is, Will Davis.
Yeah. Lamar is coached by former LSU player and assistant coach Will Davis, who was a catcher at LSU from 04 to 07, and he worked in his assistant under Paul Maneri for, hell, almost a decade, 08 to 15.
Yeah.
He's in his third season at the helm of the Lamar program. This is here's some notes about them Cardinals that you need to know about. They're hitting .279 as a team. That's not good. That's below average.
It's decent in the SEC.
For the last place team in the SEC. only 30 home runs and 29 stolen bases. The Lamar pitching staff.
So what you're telling me is they're going to tee off on the LSU pitching.
Yeah, of course. That's what would happen.
They're batting .279 as a team, and they're going to come and get
they're
16
hits.
They're going to
explode
yeah.
for 16 hits and 10 runs tonight at Alex Box Stadium. Lamar is hitting .279 as a team. The pitching staff has an ERA of 5.03. So LSU's bats that woke up about halfway through Thursday night's opener against Florida and then just carried that over through Friday and Saturday should be able to tee off on Lamar's pitching. Cody, are you okay?
Should be. Yeah, I just banged my knee. It's fine.
There you go. You found that counter.
Yeah, I did.
I saw you.
There's a milk crate under the counter I put my feet on, and I think somebody adjusted the height on my chair. But anyway.
World famous.
Yeah. I don't know. It's not just the hitting that, because we've seen the bats in the midweek before.
Just, yeah.
So, and disappear. Then we've seen them come out and just this past weekend be, you know, not that great until the end of the game on a Thursday. And then all of a sudden, you know, banging out double digit run output in the next two games. So it's not the bats that I'm so much worried about, but I feel like Paul Maneri in the midweek, I don't know what necessarily he's going to do with the pitching, but I think we have another one of those where it's going to be a lot of guys getting an inning, getting two innings, getting, you know, some situational appearances out of the bullpen and things. So I'm more interested in how the pitching does and then the health of a certain few guys, you know. And I don't know if we'll get the answer to that because Chris Reed, Zach Watson, of course you want them back, but do you even really risk putting them back in a midweek game against a subpar Lamar team? So you don't even really get the answer to probably the most important question, I would say, and that'd be the health of those two guys going into the weekend.
I typically would say you don't want to do that with the midweek game, but all transparency, everyone that listens to this show knows who I cheer for, who my team
Fair
is.
Enough.
Okay.
This is not your season.
They are terrible.
This is not your season.
They are.
Is that
awful.
Who's coming up this weekend?
Yes.
Okay.
LSU's on the road at Alabama.
All right.
That should be an easy run rule each game sweep for LSU.
Well, all right.
That's how bad Alabama is this year.
Run rule's not a thing, but I understand what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying.
I mean, it's still.
The white flag should come out, or Alabama coaching staff should just be like, after the fourth inning, they should. Okay, stop, please. Please. Please stop. Paul, can you put in all your backups? Can you put in the water boys, and they would still
Scary.
Beat up on this year's Alabama
Scary.
Team?
Scary. It still worries me.
Long time since Jim Wills has been there. skip assistant.
So you're saying maybe, just maybe, it might not even matter.
I don't think it matters this week with the level of competition. They're playing one of the worst teams in the Southland Conference tonight, and then they're playing the worst team in the SEC this weekend. So LSU, because they did go through that murderer's row a little bit. You know, I mean, they had to play Florida, who was a top 25 ranked team. So this is the week to get healthy. This is the week to, you can piecemeal it, you know,
if you have a week to do that. Yeah.
Before that, because after this week, nope.
Yeah.
Because then it's Ole Miss. We already talked about Louisiana Tech. Their RPI is the highest of, well, the La Tech is also playing UL in baseball, and that's the highest team left for UL for RPI purposes. Mm-hmm. So
I think I saw yesterday collegiate baseball has Louisiana Tech ranked at like 18th.
Yeah, they're a top 20 ball club.
That's crazy.
So you got Ole Miss, La Tech, a series at Arkansas, Auburn at home before the SEC tournament. So if you want to kind of get healthy and you want to play a lot of guys, this is the week to have that happen, because the competition is about to it's falling off the cliff this week for LSU, for the baseball team. They do have a few players. Someone to keep note of is junior infielder J.C. Carrera. He is hitting .315 and leads the team with 5 home runs and 29 RBIs. Also, senior infielder Robin Adams leads the club in home runs with 6 and is second on the team with RBIs. So they got a couple of good players, you know, out there. Some nice pieces, but definitely.
How are they on the bump, though? Because that's the real question. Because, you know, Florida's got guys that.
ERA of 5.
Yeah, exactly. Florida's got guys that can generally hit the ball, but when LSU is putting up, you know.
It should be a good night at the plate for like Josh Smith and Cade Veloso and Antoine DeFlantis.
And all three of those guys seem to be pretty hot right now.
Yeah, and if you've been struggling with your bat, this is the night that Paul Maneri is going to be like, son, go ahead. It's your time to shine. Let's turn this around.
I mean, Saul Garza's got a home run this past weekend, right? So, you know, keep a bat in his hand, maybe. It's a better problem to have, you know what I mean? And the fact that we've seen guys step up in the absence of Chris Reed and Zach Watson has been helpful. Maybe we see, you know, I hate to say this, but somebody like a Hal Hughes get a bat in his hand this weekend or something. You know, a guy that seems to be teetering around that 200 mark with his batting average, who's very good in the field, but can't seem to hit at all. Maybe you get a bat in his mm-hmm. hand this weekend and get a little confidence on your neck. Because I can guarantee you, you know, no matter what team you root for, it's going to happen at some point in the season where there's going to be a high-pressure moment with runners on base that you are going to need a guy to come through that, as a fan of that team, you are not going to be confident that this guy is going to come through for you. And maybe just maybe an at-bat towards the latter end of the regular season can give whatever player that is that extra little bit of confidence to get up there, dig in, and get that base knock in that high-pressure moment. Because, I mean, tournament baseball is fun, crazy, and high stress.
You know what the difference between ordinary and extraordinary?
That little bit of extra.
A little bit extra. It all comes back to waiting, which I just love.
As long as the game doesn't start happening around the studio, we'll be fine. I'm not okay with that. I will not sign off.
That is not allowed. just to say. I have a question, though. We talked about it at the start of the season. We both feel that this should be a walk in the park, no pun intended, for LSU tonight versus the Lamar Cardinals. Oh, by the way, you can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game starts at 6. First pitch, 6:30 from Alex Box Stadium / Skip Bertman Field. It's also the annual prostate cancer awareness game.
The Tigers
are going to wear some special light blue batting helmets in support of the early detection and treatment of prostate cancer in men. So that's kind of cool.
No, yeah, we should see. It's that light blue. I don't know. We're just going to call it a light blue.
It's like a teal almost.
Well, it's not. It's a version of teal. That was the point I was making. Kaylee's favorite color is that cyan, teal, turquoise. It's somewhere in that realm. And this is a version of that color. So she always enjoys watching tonight's game, and they should wear the pinstripes. If I remember, they usually wear the pinstripe uniforms when they go with the blue tops, so it should look pretty darn sweet.
Okay. So we got 15.
Be careful, you're doing math
I'm
over
doing
there.
Math.
Yeah, be careful.
I'm doing math. And I yes, and if you're wondering, listeners, I have to move my lips when I
the
do
stress
math.
On his face to
oh,
figure that out. You got
strained.
It, though. I think you got it.
There's 15 regular season games left for LSU before the SEC tournament.
Okay.
And then, obviously, regional and hopefully a super regional and College World Series. Our boy, Antoine Duplantis, Lafayette High is own. We just talked about him trying to break and set the new record for the career hits mark.
At LSU.
At LSU, which is set by Eddie Furness.
Because Jake Mangum has taken the reins there, right. And he's going to get the SEC mark, which is also held by Eddie Furness.
It's 352.
Okay.
Okay. Duplantis, after this past weekend, his career hits total is now 321.
So that's 31 more hits to go, right?
Yes.
In 15 games?
So that's just regular season.
Plus postseason?
Plus you got SEC tournament, and more than likely, at least, an NCAA regional.
My advice to him, which he does not want, is don't press yet.
I don't think he's not the type.
Even though it seems like maybe you're getting to where, oh, man, we need plenty multi-hit games. No, don't press yet because you're 1-4-4 or 1-4-5 game away from being able to go hitless in a game and still being okay. So that's my advice in that.
He only needs about 2 a game.
Those numbers are T. That's what I'm saying.
For just the regular season. That's not counting SEC tournament and NCAA regional. So he's got a little bit of a breathing room there to set the new mark. So so we'll see.
I don't know. I figured he would have gotten there a little quicker, but as long as we get there, that'll be a great moment.
And congratulations to freshman Cole Henry.
Yep. Co-freshman of the week, right?
Co-freshman of the week in the SEC after he struck out 12 Gators.
Struck out 12. He threw 5 1/3 innings, so that's 16 outs. And 16 outs, he struck out 12 guys.
That's good.
That's efficient.
That's just good.
Your pitch count might be a little high, though.
Could we? I don't know. I'll throw this out here. We'll make this a Twitter poll question. What the hell? By the end of the season, is the freshman going to be their best pitcher? When we look back on this season, LSU fans, are we going to look back and go, Cole Henry was the best pitcher on the staff? Not Eric Walker, not Zach Hess, not Mikhail Hilliard. It was the true freshman righty, Cole Henry. Go to the 1037 The Game Twitter account. Vote on that. When we come back, we will wrap up the first hour here of RP3 and Company right here on 1037 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 1037 The Game, as well as simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can give us a call on the Arco Equipment Hotline if you'd like this morning, 337-706-0111. This hour we talked a little bit, led things off about Mickey Loomis. He had his annual press conference on Monday for NFL Draft Week. He talked about how he and Sean Payton are usually in lockstep with one another and what they need to do with the draft, their approach. The third wheel, so to speak, is going to be Jeff Ireland there, who's made a big impact as a talent evaluator, in my opinion, with the recent drafts that the Saints have had. We also had a terrific interview with longtime Beauchamp head softball coach Thad Dickey. The Gators are headed to Sulphur, to Frasch Park for the state softball tournament. They're one of several teams from Acadiana going to be representing the region with a chance to win a state championship. Beauchamp will be playing Buckeye in the Class 4A semifinals this Friday at 1:30. We also talked how it is Avengers Week. And that Cody will be bracing through the crowds on Sunday. As your boy, I will not.
No, I'll be there, though. You can count on that.
I will be staying away. My weekend will include going to the Angola Prison Rodeo on Saturday.
That's awesome, though.
Yes, first time.
It's really fun.
And then I will more
get
than
that
like
hot sauce.
Oh yeah,
get that hot sauce.
I may if if you do a good job this week as a producer, a license plate turned ashtray could be in your future.
That's pretty cool. I've never had one, but I've always wanted one.
They're in the gift shop. Right. They were. They used to be. I don't know. I haven't been to Angola in a while. That's a story for another day, why I was at Angola to begin with. Looking at...
I mean, you were in the gift shop, so it couldn't have been that bad.
Yeah, I did a tour. And then we also talked about LSU baseball playing the last of their final three midweek contests.
You all right over there?
Tonight at Lamar. Tonight against Lamar, rather. One of the worst teams in the Southland Conference.
We put the poll question up as well, so you can go try to give us an answer, give us your thoughts on that. If by the end of the season, freshman Cole Henry, is he going to be the best pitcher on the LSU staff?
He sure does seem like he's going to be the Friday night starter for next year. I mean, who has pitched more consistent and better for LSU this year? Walker's been up and down. He's still coming back from injury. He's still not quite where he needs to be. We've talked about Zach Hess being up and down. Landon Marceau struggled early, the other freshman that they were counting on. Jaden Hill has looked good, but he's been injured. So I think it's an easy decision for me. I think it's Cole Henry. And I think by the end of the year, he's going to be a huge factor in if the Tigers advance out of an NCAA regional into a super regional and to the College World Series in Omaha, Nebraska. But that's my thought process. So we want to hear from you. Once again, you can go to the 103.7 The Game Twitter account and vote. By the end of the season, will the freshman, Cole Henry, be the best pitcher on the LSU staff? Right now we got 5 votes, Cody. It's already 80% in favor of saying yes. Already. But LSU's not the only one that's going to be out there. We'll talk more about UL baseball. They're going to be at Southern Miss tonight. Difficult midweek game.
That's not easy.
Difficult midweek game. Going to Hattiesburg's always a tall task. And for a team that had appeared to build up momentum and then let a game get away from them in the opening game there at UT Arlington and then got swept over the weekend, 3 games under 500, overall under 500 now in Sunbelt play. If you're the Raging Cajuns, you got to go on the road and take on. Is Southern Miss still the Golden Eagles?
That's how I dubbed them in the 2-minute drill, so I sure hope so.
I still remember them from the days when Brett Favre was their quarterback, so that they were definitely the Golden Eagles back then. But that was also the late 80s, so I may need to update my records there. Just saying. When we come back, first hour in the books, terrific start to the day. We'll talk more New Orleans Saints, Mickey Loomis, draft week, right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
He's everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that belt.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Yeah, look, I kind of like the schedule, I'll be honest with you. I mean, you know, our opponents are predetermined, so it's just a matter of when we play them. And look, we got our bye right in the middle of the season. I like that. Those first 4 weeks are tough opponents, but we're going to have to play them anyway during the course of the year. So it's not like you can avoid playing teams that you know you perceive as being pretty good. I think in the first half we're playing 5 of our 8 I think are playoff teams from a year ago. That's just the way it goes. You know, look, we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to playing the guys on the schedule that we have, and you know, we've got, what do we have, 5, I think, national games, 4 prime time, 3 of those that are home. I like that, too. So I think we like our schedule.
Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also, simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. That's Mickey Loomis once again talking about the Saints' schedule. We have not really dived into the schedule here, Cody, so let's do so right now. Now,
undefeated.
I have thoughts about the schedule. I don't...
Careful now.
I don't make predictions based on the schedule because, especially with the NFL. Now, you can do it more with college because there's a little bit more consistency from year to year, right? The strong get stronger, you know, that's how it works. The NFL, it's all about the turnover from year to year, right? I mean, what's the average? Half the teams that were in the playoffs the year before don't make it into the playoffs the next year.
Sounds right.
So the fact that the Saints, you know, have won back-to-back division titles, whatnot, you know, is that's against the norm. I mean, there's very few teams that are year in, year out. Now, I know New England is usually there. Philly's been there in recent years. New Orleans has been there in recent years. The Rams. So, but it's always so hard because of the injuries. And when the schedule comes out, I know everyone looks at it. And you played that.
Yeah, from the Patton Oswalt film, man. Big schedule's out. Big
undefeated.
Fan. Undefeated.
No.
We're 13-3.
13-3. No. Oh, yeah.
14-2.
Yeah, you know I'm getting out that week. Yeah.
15-1.
15-1.
There's no way they lose with us in the parking lot.
I do find it interesting, and look, the Saints are going to be ones that are going to accept the challenge. I love the fact, personally, that they do not have a noon game the first month of the season.
It's odd, too.
It's odd, but it shows you. It shows me that the NFL, and I know we'll talk a little bit more about this with our good friend Andrew Juge coming up here in the second hour as he joins us from the Saints Happy Hour podcast, is they know that their box office, they know that people want to see the Saints. Start off Monday Night Football versus the Houston Texans. We get Deshaun Watson and Drew Brees in a Monday Night Football game inside the Superdome. Oh, that is going to be awesome. Okay?
Crowd should be insane, too, because
right.
Texans fans are going to be there as well.
All the Oilers fans are going to be there, too.
It's going to be good. And it's prime time in New Orleans.
It's prime time in New Orleans, so you can make a weekend of it. Yeah, the schedule drops. You know, the first thing my wife says, she goes, can we go to New Orleans that week? Can we go to the Monday Night Football game?
So nonchalant, right?
Very, very subtle. I was like, I see what you did there.
Subtle, not so subtle.
Subtle, not so subtle. She just did it in passing conversation. I saw the Saints schedule was released today, babe. I said, yeah. She goes, oh, they opened it up against the Texans on Monday Night Football. And I was like, uh-huh.
That would be like, it's like when I get home and I sit down on the couch and then I notice on the coffee table there's this little note left for me and it's like, take out the garbage. Take out the garbage. Could you unload the dishwasher, please? Could you, change the litter box? Oh, and by the way, I want to go to Monday Night Football.
That's exactly how that rolls down. That's already, I'm glad your wife, big up to Mrs. Schuch for already going ahead and send down the ground rules. It's a smart lady.
You're not helping, Raymond.
But they get the Texans, right? This is a perennial playoff team out of the AFC. And then it's on the road with the Rams and the Seahawks, right? That's how it goes, Rams-Seahawks, or is it Seahawks-Rams? I think it's Rams-Seahawks. Those are both going to be your afternoon games. Those are going to be your 3:30 games. So that's traditionally when you have the most eyes on the game.
Rams-Seahawks.
It's Rams-Seahawks, okay? So Rams-Seahawks. back-to-back. The Saints will stay out on the West Coast the entire time. They will not come back to the complex in Metairie in between those two games. They'll stay out there. Seattle's a perennial playoff team. Russell Wilson's now the highest-paid player in the NFL.
Sorry, I laughed.
You laugh because he's the highest-paid player?
I do. I do laugh because of that.
You don't think he's worth it? Because, look, if you're Seattle, you have no choice. You have to pay him up.
I understand he's the highest. Look, this is this. Go get your money. I'm not trying to bash the guy at all. That's not what I'm doing. I'm asking you two questions. Is he the highest-paid player in the NFL? Is he the
yes.
Is he the best player in the NFL?
No.
That's all I wanted to ask.
But
yeah, no, I get it. That's
like
Joe
Flacco was the highest.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Matt Stafford.
Yeah, I'm not knocking them for getting. Go get your money, dude. Do what you got to do. But if you're asking me, is that the right amount of value for him? If I'm the team owner or the general, like, well, no, he's not the best player in the league.
I'll flip it back to you.
I'm oversimplifying it. I know, but
I understand your point. But shouldn't Russell Wilson deserve to get more money because he, in fact, did get Sierra?
Oh, well, 1-2 step, my friend.
I'm just saying.
And he kept her, too. Like, that's the thing. Like, that's been a minute.
They married.
Yeah, that wasn't just like a passing thing. No.
Respect.
Locked down. Yes, sir.
Respect to that boy. But Seattle, the Rams, they'll have the narrative about the Rams, right, because of the NFC Championship game. And I know people are like, well, you know, they could go 2-2 in that spot and they want to predict. I don't think it matters. I have questions. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tough for the Texans to win on the road. It is tough for them to win on the road, and it's going to be tough for them to win in the Superdome. A, are you trying to tell me that those fans aren't going to be absolutely lit on fire for Monday Night Football to open up the season after the way the season ended? Saints fans are going to be amped for Monday Night Football.
I mean, I wouldn't want to be Roger Goodell in the building, tell you that much.
I don't want to be the other team in that building. I'm serious. That's going to be, like, I saw that and I was like, oh, hell. We don't know what the Rams are going to be like. The Super Bowl hangover is a real thing, especially for the loser. And not only did the Rams lose, Cody, they got absolutely curb stomped and embarrassed in the biggest game.
You do not belong.
They don't have Sue. They lost a couple of pieces. What's their psyche going to be? What are they going to be like?
I mean, is Jared Goff that guy that's going to keep everybody's nose to the grind and you know, keep them from being... I mean, I don't know, but I also don't think so. He's not Drew Brees.
And it's not as if fans in L.A. are passionate
about... What? Not like what?
Fan. I like it. Like what? What? So Seattle's in sort of a mini rebuilding mode. They always give the Saints hell. And then they back home at against Dallas.
Once again. Primetime, right?
That's a primetime game, too. That's a Sunday night game. So you get Monday Night Football, back-to-back afternoon games, which will be the most viewed during the day slate in the afternoon, that head into primetime, and then another primetime game. So I get it that the schedule may look a little front-heavy, but...
Yeah, that first quarter is
right. Look, it's going to be a challenge, and what's the rule of thumb? If you had an easier schedule the year before, you know, if you're a playoff team, your schedule is going to be harder the next year. That's also part of the reason why there's so much turnover when it comes to playoff teams in the NFL, because the NFL on purpose schedules that way. That said, I will say a few things. The Saints have to come out on fire. Like, they can't be messing around like they did this past season when they lost to Tampa Bay in the Fitzmagic and then nearly lost to Cleveland and the Browns if the Browns had a field goal kicker. Okay? So they're going to have to be Johnny on the spot to start off the season. But I feel like they will. I think that the way last season ended, I think there's going to be a sense of urgency with this team. I think this team has a huge chip on their shoulder, and I think you're going to see that. Don't be surprised, and I'm terrible at predictions, Cody, but don't be surprised if you see the Saints go 3-1 or 4-0 in that period. Like, I just think they're going to be coming out, if healthy, they're going to be coming out wanting to make a statement
right.
every game, because they're going to take what happened to them in the NFC Championship, and that's going to be fuel that no coaching, no new contract, nothing can touch. Like, that's going to be something that very few people can understand, that they got robbed, and they feel like the league screwed them over, and they're going to play like that. They're going to play like their hair is on fire, using an old term. That Monday Night Football game, that is going to be insane. You're going to see those guys playing on another level. So, for you, though, we haven't had a lot of time to discuss the schedule. What sticks out to you besides that gauntlet there in right. the beginning?
Well, I'm just looking immediately at the next quarter of the schedule. You know, that first four is very tough, but if they come through that, even at 2-2, the next quarter of the schedule, the next 25% is about as walk in the park as you can get as far as the NFL goes. You have the Saints there at home, so against the Buccaneers, so we're still yet to see the site of WrestleMania 36, Raymond James Stadium. But the Saints will play the Buccaneers. It's a division game, but the Saints should win that. Then they play away against the Jags. Who knows who's even going to be on the team in Jacksonville?
Exactly.
And then they stay on the road, and they go play at Chicago. It's not as cold as it could be. That's middle of October. They're in Chicago.
They look up there. They look up because they're playing in early October.
It's cold, but it's not freezing. And Chicago is, they're better, but they're not, they're not any great shakes to me. And then after that, you wrap up that quarter with a home game against the Cardinals. And that should also be a win. So you go from four very competitive games, which they should be, to four less competitive games, is what I'll say.
Chicago's sneaky, though.
On the road is worrsome, but the Saints are a better team.
They're a better team. I would feel more confident about that game if it was at the Superdome. But Soldier Field is legit.
It's tough to get four games in a row like that you would feel a little more. Who else would you throw in there to feel a little more confident than? The Jets? But who knows? They might be good. I don't know. He says no. He knows.
The Jets may be good.
He just mouths to me, no.
No, Cody. No, Cody. No. No, that's adorable. I'm listening that to
too much.
That.
Been listening to too much Taz and the Moose. That's the problem.
You listen to live here from 5 to 6 on 103.7 The Game every weekday morning.
That's pretty slick.
Thank you. I don't know. I like their schedule, and I'd much rather it be difficult and them kind of make a statement against these teams. Texans from the playoffs last year, right? Seahawks, Rams. Rams went to the Super Bowl. We know that. And the Cowboys. What if the Saints come out and go 4-0 in that stretch? That's going to be a statement of putting the rest of the league on notice and going, guess what? We're here. We haven't gone anywhere.
Who dat?
Who dat? And we're angry. We're an angry who dat. We're not the joyful, we're going to come down to Bourbon Street and hang out. We're going to do a second. No. Like, none of that second line stuff. This Saints team is going to be bumping C Murder this season.
They're all going to have nose rings like Alvin Kamara, the entire team.
They're just going to be angry about it the whole year.
Something else, though, that stands out that in the schedule that I'm just noticing now, the Saints will have played 8 games. So they will play an entire half of the season, and they will have played 1 division game against the Buccaneers. So the second half of that schedule is almost all division games. They play the Panthers twice, the Falcons twice, and the Bucks once, just in the final 8 games of the season.
Dirty Birds on Thanksgiving.
So you've got, what is that, 4? That's 5 out of your final 8 games are division games.
That's correct, Amundo.
I see a couple of those games possibly getting flexed there by the end of the season.
Yeah. So don't be surprised if the Saints get a little bit more primetime love. Right now they got, the 5?
They have 4, because I think the limit is 5.
The 4. They got the 4. The other one's the Colts game, which is an odd.
Yeah, late
Indianapolis,
in the season.
Indianapolis, yeah. 10-year anniversary of the
Middle
Super Bowl.
Of December.
By the way, 10-year anniversary of the season.
10-4, boss. 10-4.
I'm just saying.
In the dome. It's in the dome.
I'm just throwing that up. 10-year anniversary of the Super Bowl. Just saying. I'm not saying what I'm saying, but you know what I'm saying.
I remember. Shut your mouth.
I remember. Oh, man. When we come back here at RP3 and Company, Did the Astros rebound after a disappointing weekend last night? We'll let you know right here on 103.7 The Game.
Pitch on the way. And that is drilled deep to right. Reddick is going back at the wall, reaches up, and did he catch that? No, he didn't. It's into the first row for a two-run home run for Polanco, and it is now a 9-5 Twins lead. Polanco's fourth hit of the game is a long ball, his fourth of the year. Gray with the white batting gloves. Here's the dark blue socks high. Pitch on the way. That's bounced right side, right at Crone. First baseman scoops it up, takes it to first himself, and that is the ball game. The Houston Astros fall to the Minnesota Twins by a final of 9-5, as that's now three straight losses for the Astros.
The Houston Astros suffered their first loss at home there in the juice box since last September, as the Twins took them out last night in the first of a three-game series, 9-5 there at Minute Maid Park. And, you know, I just it's a very long season, but you don't like them seeing losing games like this. Jason Castro for the Twins hit his first home run in more than a year as he took former teammate Brad Peacock out to right center. The Twins added four more runs in the sixth, pulling away with RBI hits for Max Kepler, Polanco, which you heard, and Cruz. The Astros, meanwhile, scattered only two runs off of Minnesota's starting pitcher in 5 2/3. The Astros did get eight hits off the starter, but he just gave up. He was not. The Astros were unable to get enough runs crossing home plate. It's too early to tell what's going on with the Astros. They had looked so good, but once again, this is baseball, right? This is big league baseball. This encompasses big league baseball better than anything else. You look like the best team on the planet sweeping the Yankees, going and taking care of the Mariners. And then you come back and you drop two of three to the Tejas Rangers. And then you lose your opener against the Minnesota Twins. But this is baseball. Like, the one thing I've learned in my life, in my adult life of covering sports, is never to overreact when it comes to Major League Baseball games. Like, for real. We're still in April. So this is my message to all Houston Astro fans. Yes, is it disappointing that they lost? Sure. Is it disappointing now that they've lost three of their last four games and have done so against inferior competition like the Rangers and the Twinkies? Yeah. The Twins are a pretty decent ball club, to be fair. They're 13-7 overall right now. Astros have fallen to 13-9. And the Astros did do a good job. They tried to mount a little bit of a comeback there, scoring a run in the sixth, three more in the seventh. But it just wasn't enough. The Twins got those two insurance runs in the eighth to kind of seal the deal for the 9-5 victory. Like I said, Astros score five runs. They got 11 hits. You would think that would be enough to get the W, but it was not. It was not. Still, the season's early. They're still trying to figure out that rotation a little bit. That rotation got roughed up over the weekend against the Rangers. Colin McHugh had a bad game. We know that. Peacock did not pitch well yesterday. They got the one ace, right? They got Verlander, and then they have these other guys that they're trying to develop into other legitimate number two, number three, number four guys. Can they still get it together? Absolutely. Hell, they could win tonight's game. easy enough. But disappointing finish or a disappointing start to this series. Quick turnaround, that could have played a role as well for the Stros, but they'll get back to it tonight against the Twinkies there at Minute Maid Park. But once again, for all Astro fans that may be feeling a little down about your team's performance, dropping 2 of 3 to the Rangers and now losing the series opener to the Minnesota Twins, fear not. It's April. Once again, fear not. It's April. Would you like the Astros to be in first place in the AL West and not be in second place? Would you like them not losing games to the Twins and the Rangers? Absolutely. But once again, it's April. That's going to be my mantra. And when we get to May, my mantra for you is going to be
Mariska Hargitay.
It's going to be, it's May. Calm down. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we're going to go back to the Saints talk with our good friend Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parson III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 on Stadium Network. It's time for us to head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our second guest of the day. He's the man that can be featured, heard. He's the man behind the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He's our good friend. He joins us every Tuesday, the one and only Andrew Juge. Andrew, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well. Yeah, gearing up for the NFL draft. Now we're a little over 48 hours away, and, at this point, excited. It's one of those things where you really start planning for this the second the season is over. And, it's this 2.5-month-long period of just really slow NFL news. I mean, you have free agency and you have some things, but you really see those mock drafts start to get pumped out. And I'm just excited that 2 days from now, we won't have to look at any more mock drafts. We won't have to do that a whole exercise. It's the real thing. It's here. So it's exciting. And, obviously it's a little slower for the Saints this year, but nonetheless, I expect them to pick up some talent that hopefully can help them.
Andrew, you listen to the presser yesterday that Mickey Loomis, longtime front office leader of the New Orleans Saints, had. And we played a couple of the clips, and I kind of laughed at a few of them because what he said could be exactly true, but there was also a little kind of like little smirk to Mickey's face when he said, it's real difficult to trade up into the first round, and, we're really happy of where we're at and everything like that. Their recent history, him and Sean Payton specifically together, and then with the addition of Jeff Ireland, they are aggressive. They traded up to get Mark Ingram. They traded up to get Brandon Cooks. They traded up to get Marcus Davenport. Hell, they traded up to get Alvin Kamara. They usually do not sit pat. That's not what they do. What do you think is going to happen later this week, Thursday, Friday? Do you think they trade up into the first round, or do you think possibly they make some trades to get more picks on day two for the second and third round?
Well, this feels, the only time in the Sean Payton era I can kind of say it was similar is the year they drafted Akeem Hicks in the third round. And, I think that was 2012. And so they didn't have a pick until the third round. Now, Sean Payton wasn't there, to kind of be in someone's ear and say, hey, I want to draft this guy. So, it was surprising. But that's really the only time they've had a pick, no pick in the first, and really had to wait this long. I really would be surprised if the Saints stand pat and wait to pick until 62. I mean, you're talking about them basically holding idle all Thursday night, getting through that whole day. And then I just think when day two starts, You know, let's assume they don't get into the first round. Day two starts, you know, they're sitting there at 62. You know, they've got to wait another 30 picks before it's them. And I just think Loomis will get antsy. Sean Payton will get antsy. And here's the thing, and you know, the thing about Mickey Loomis's pressers is he's not going to give you a whole lot of info. I mean, he's notorious for keeping things close to the vest. But the one thing that he did come clean about, and I think this is true of the Saints historically, at least in this era, the Saints' draft philosophy is very much true to their board. They believe, right or wrong, they believe that what their scouts have come up with, what they have come up with, is correct, and they're gonna stick to that. And so they have identified players, and when they feel like they can go get a guy that they have a vision for, that fits a need, that works well with their system, that they believe they can turn into a good player based on the environment and the coaching staff and the scheme and everything, they're going to go get that guy. They identify a guy that they want, and they find a way to go get him. So it's a different draft strategy from, hey, let's accumulate a bunch of picks and get a bunch of rookies in here, and hopefully some of them work out. It's very much, hey, we believe very strongly that this guy is going to be good. And obviously they're wrong, plenty. But that's kind of the draft philosophy. So, you know, when you're sitting there in the second round, if there's a guy that starts to fall, that they really feel like, hey, this is the guy we need to go get, I think they'll pull the trigger on it. Now, the question then becomes, how high can they go? I believe, you know, if you're giving up a first-round pick next year and the 62, you combine that, the best-case scenario is probably around 25, 24, 25. That's probably as high as they can go. I personally would like to see them not give up the first-round pick next year and keep doing this, but it's absolutely in play. But, you know, we'll have to see what becomes available.
We're speaking to Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. Andrew, once the first and second rounds are in the books this week, is Andrus Peat still a New Orleans Saint?
I think so. You got to look at the roster right now, and I don't think they've made a decision yet on where Andrus Peat fits with this team long term. And I think this is one more year. If he can have a healthy season and play very well, and let's say Teron Armstead does not, there's a very real chance that Teron Armstead may not last past this year. I mean, we just saw Max Unger abruptly retire because of health. And we know Armstead has really been through the ringer physically. How much longer can he say mentally, hey, I don't know if I still have this in me, you know? And so I think Armstead at this point in his career, with how many injuries he's had, is probably year to year. That's not to say he couldn't play another 5 years in the league. I mean, anything's possible, but I think given his injury history and how much he's had to rehab and work on his body, you just never know where a player is at mentally. And so if Drew Brees decides to go after this year and Armstead says, you know, I wanted to see Brees' career through. Now that he's gone, I've had all these injuries, I'm calling it a day. All of a sudden, you have a massive hole at left tackle. Andrus Peat was originally drafted to be a tackle, ideally a right tackle, but that side of the line didn't work out for him. So there is still a chance that Andrus Peat is the left tackle of the future for the Saints, and I think the Saints really want to see what he can do this year, and if he can stay healthy and if he can play well. And, you know, they kind of want to see what happens with Teron Armstead this year, and then reevaluate things next offseason. So I believe he'll still be on the team. Also, you have to ask yourself, do they have enough options internally to replace him if they were to ship him off? While I like Cameron Tom and I like Will Clapp, there's also a position at center that's opened up with Max Unger gone, and I just don't believe the Saints are in a position right now to not only lose Max Unger to retirement but also trade away Andrus Peat. I think their offensive line needs a little bit more stability than that.
So, Andrew, you wouldn't give up Peat if, say, you got two twos for him, and then you could use one of those guys to get a left tackle that you could groom for a year and maybe have Will Clapp play center and Eason from the Vikings replace Peat at guard?
Well, if you're offering me 2 second round picks for Andres Pete, yes, I changed my mind. But
I guess it
depends on the compensation. I mean, you know, the Saints gave up a. I mean, you got to look at it. Eli Apple is a corner. Now, granted, he wasn't playing great, but the Saints got him for a fourth round pick. And Teddy Bridgewater is a quarterback who's still young, and the Saints got him for a third round pick. So, I think getting two twos for Andres Pete, I mean, I think, yeah, you'd have to say yes to that because then you feel confident that you can replace him with something. But I think realistically, we're probably just talking about a third or a fourth round pick. And in that scenario, to me, it's a non-negotiable. It's a non-starter.
Andrew, a lot of talk about Saints need to address pass catchers, that they're going to go after a wide receiver. They've been linked to the kid out of Ohio State in the draft. They've been linked to numerous tight ends in this year's draft. But I don't know, as we get closer to draft day, or days rather, it just feels to me that this is going to be a draft where they're going to kind of surprise us like they did a couple years ago with Ramchick, where they're going to be drafting an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman or both. That's just how it feels to me, that they are looking to shore up their lines and that they're okay with the wide receivers they have on their roster.
I'm kind of with you, Raymond. They poked around at Adam Humphries in free agency. So they were looking for a slot receiver. They liked him. He got too expensive. And when it didn't work out with him, the Saints kind of got out of that game, the receiver game. And I think it was one of those things where they just felt like the receiver market got too expensive and they weren't going to pay $8, $10 million a year for a guy that they just didn't really feel was going to be that productive. So they bowed out of that market. And so, you know, when you're poking around in free agency and you don't get the guy you want, it stands to reason that you'll address it in the draft. So I do think if the right guy becomes available, they will absolutely pick a receiver. But I don't think they're going to force it because, again, you've got to make sure if you're acquiring a receiver in the draft, he's going to be better than what you already have. And, you know, I think Tre'Quan Smith and Keith Kirkwood, I mean, they're good players. They're developing. They had decent rookie years, not great, but pretty good. They showed some talent. And I think it stands to reason in year two that those guys could ascend and be better. Now, obviously, you have Ted Ginn. You have Michael Thomas, you have two veterans, and I'm counting, you know, like Mickey Loomis said yesterday, you're counting Thomas as a veteran now. But you've got two guys that are kind of proven, and then you've got some guys in Austin Carr and Tre'Quan Smith and Keith Kirkwood that are young that you're still trying to develop and hoping that they can become something. And then you've got Cam Meredith coming back from injury, and obviously he's a big question mark, but you hope that he can rebound and maybe show some of the form he used to have. So when you put that receivers group together, it's not impossible that one or two guys step up behind Michael Thomas and have good seasons. So I like the receivers group. I think it's okay. I think it could stand to add another player. Now, you mentioned Paris Campbell. If he becomes available, the receiver out of Ohio State, at some point in the second round, I could see the Saints trying to go get him. You know, Andy Isabel is another name out of UMass that's been thrown out. You know, he's kind of more of the gritty, small white receiver that runs great routes and has great hands. But, you know, kind of he fits that profile. But
so he's going to be going to New England is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so they're going to have to fight tooth, nail, and claw with Bill Belichick to get him. But, that's a guy that's been linked to the Saints a little bit. So it's a possibility, but at the end of the day, I don't think they're going to force it at receiver, and I don't think receiver is as deep in this draft. Defensive end, you know, pass rush is a need for the Saints, and that feels like a position where they will be able to get a guy. Tight end is another thing. I'd like to see a tight end in this draft come to the Saints. It's pretty deep in this draft, and I know they signed Jared Cook. They still have Josh Hill, but I think this team needs some youthful talent to come in and bolster the position. They haven't had an impressive young tight end in a while. So that would be a position I look at. And I'm with you, offensive line. They had so many injuries up front that I think if they can have a little bit more depth there, they'll be able to protect themselves.
Andrew, and to further piggyback off your point, this is a franchise, specifically under Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton, they do not overpay for their wide receivers, right? Marcus Colston, a late-round pick, Lance Moore. Okay, they find guys and they develop guys, and that's why I don't think they're going to overspend in reach for a wide receiver. You mentioned tight end. What about this? And we'll wrap it up with this, Andrew. Yeah, they brought in Jarrett Cook. They got Josh Hill as their blocker. I would like them drafting another young tight end. Who better to mentor that young tight end than Ben Watson, who apparently reports are is considering not retiring after all? Should the Saints make that a priority, go sign the big fella who's had a great rapport with Drew Brees and have him essentially on the roster for depth and as kind of a mentor and a great leader in the locker room?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I was very surprised to see that. I was very surprised to see that he's considering a return on him. Yeah, that was unexpected, especially after last year. I just kind of felt like it was pretty clear that he just isn't the player he is anymore. I think what he would be able to contribute on the field at this point is pretty limited. And you just signed Jared Cook, so you have a tight end that is your starter now. And, you know, Josh Hill, you have more of a blocking type player. So I don't know on the field, at least, where Ben Watson fits in. And I just don't think he's at this point in his career, if he's going to go somewhere, he doesn't want to go into a situation where there's a chance he could be cut after training camp or preseason. He would want to go into a situation where he knows he's going to play and he knows he can benefit a team. So, you know, now the off-the-field stuff and the locker room stuff, that's immeasurable, and that's a thing. You're absolutely right. You know, so there may be value just in having him in the building. In fact, I know there would be, and so that's where you start to wonder if there's a number we can agree to that feels like it's not spending too much on the Saints side, but is a number that Watson feels good with, that's less than what he made last year. Then I could see a scenario where maybe that makes sense, but I think at this point the Saints are kind of moving on. You know, they love Ben Watson. Obviously, he's close with Brees, but I would be surprised to see him back with the Saints just because they spent so much on Jared Cook. They've gone ahead and made that investment and moved on, I think. And we'll see what happens after this draft. If they walk from this draft with no tight end, and as the season progresses, maybe someone gets hurt, then possibly I think it makes more sense to start talking about, hey, Ben Watson, would you be interested in coming back? We need you. But I don't see an obvious place to put him right now on this roster.
Andrew, appreciate it as always. What's your plans for the draft, brother? What you doing?
Locked and loaded. I'm just going to stay at home in a quiet room and just kind of enjoy it and analyze. And I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's one of those things where I'm an NFL fan too. So even when – and I'm a big LSU fan. And in general, I'm really interested in Jalen Ferguson too. So I will be watching with you know, just a lot of interest and looking forward to seeing how it all plays out.
Andrew, appreciate you as always coming on, brother. We'll talk to you next week. Recap the draft then. Enjoy the draft and enjoy your weekend, my friend.
The same to you. Thanks for having me.
It's Andrew Juge, Saints Happy Hour podcast, giving us his thoughts on what the game plan is going to be for the Saints later this week with the draft. He says he doesn't think they're going to go after Ben Watson, and he agrees with me, Cody, which is always good when the guest agrees with the host. He feels like, even though it looked like it was going to be wide receiver, it does feel like the Saints are trending towards shoring up the line, O-line and D-line. So we'll see what the Saints do with that. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we will wrap up this second hour right here on 103.7 The Game. Quick programming reminder, we got you covered today. Bumper to Bumper Sports will be from 4 to 6 with the good brother Ben Love. He's going to lead you into pregame for LSU baseball. LSU's taking on Lamar there at Alex Box. Pregame, 6 o'clock. First pitch, 6:30. And then after the completion of the baseball game, we'll have Tiger Rag Radio for you right here on 103.7 The Game. Also, if you want to listen to your Stros try to get back on track, you can do so on our sister station, KVOL, The Rewind, 97.7 FM, 1330 AM Lafayette. Or if you're over in the Lake Chuck, 104.1. Astros versus Twins. First pitch, 7 o'clock tonight over on our sister station, KVOL. Coming up here in the third hour, final hour of today's RP3 and Company, we'll do a little UL baseball preview at Southern Miss. We'll talk live in studio with Church Point head softball coach Michael Hardy. His team is into the state semifinals for the first time in a generation. But up next, my interview from yesterday that I was able to have a sit-down with the one and only Jerry Glasgow, UL head softball coach. That's coming up right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost for you, you know, when you look up in the stands and you see your mom, see the night in and night out, it's just different. I encourage everybody to be an opportunity to play at home, to do it, deserve it.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're going to head out now to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is in his second season leading the UL softball team. They are currently undefeated in Sunbelt Conference play, just wrapped up winning the regular season championship and have set the new record for best start in Sunbelt history. It is Coach Jerry Glasgow. Coach, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great.
Coach, let's talk a little bit about this past weekend. I know Georgia State's record wasn't great. But you can't afford to slip up any time when it comes to conference play. How impressed were you with the way that your bats performed over this past weekend?
Well, I was really tickled. I thought we made adjustments good. They changed speeds. They bring in a hard-throwing pitcher, then go to a slow pitcher and tried to go back and forth on velocity. And I thought our kids made great adjustments and adjusted quickly. And then I think our overall, just our confidence level right now is really soaring and getting back up to where it was in the midpoint of the season.
Let's go a little bit further back. You guys made the decision before the start of the season. You knew you had that road trip at Boone with the App State Series. And is that something that you and your staff are like, hey, we can squeeze in two extra games here, make it more of a, you know, better road trip since we're having to go all the way across the country, might as well pick up a couple of games? And why was that so important here late in the season to have those two extra games like you did?
Well, you know, I made the decision last year actually during our spring break. We had the kids here on the field in Lafayette practicing two-a-days, and I just thought, man, this is not – this is – it was – you know, it wasn't effective practices because kids really weren't bought into practicing. And, you know, you want your kids to have a great college experience. And even though they can't go to Daytona, you know, to the beach like a lot of college kids are doing this week, they can get out and see a different part of the country and get to enjoy that week off. And so we let them just basically play games. And we were able to get some good competition and get some at-bats and give our offense a chance to relax and get settled back in. And I thought it was good. I thought it was a really good trip for our kids.
Let's go back to this weekend, Coach. You know, obviously the bats were just terrific. Just kind of routed Georgia State Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. But there were some things that, you know, you discussed in your weekly press conference that you were, you know, something that you're going to have you and your staff kind of work with the girls to tighten up here. What were some of the things that you thought that you could have done better over this past weekend?
I thought we were just a little bit complacent on defense. You know, got caught with our minds wandering a few times instead of thinking, you know, they need to always play with that mindset of hit me the ball on every single pitch. So they hit the ball to me. And if you're sitting there wanting the ball to come to you, you'll have a better chance of being making a great play and anticipating the play. And I thought we looked a little tired on defense. And I think also just getting back on our field, we were a little rusty to the bounce. And we need to get back out and take some ground balls on our field and get reacclimated with the dirt here. And then our intensity level has to be a lot higher. And that probably from being on the road playing 9 games in 10 days, your intensity level tends to wander just a little bit. And we need to lock back into every single play. It could be, you know, critical importance. And we'll get that done.
Talking to Coach Jerry Glasgow, head softball coach here with the UL Raging Cajuns. Coach, let's talk a little bit about Summer Ellison. She eclipsed the 500 strikeout career mark this past weekend, and now she's only one win short of joining the 30-win club, only becoming the fifth pitcher ever in program history to accomplish that feat. What have you seen from Summer? She seems to have just gotten better as the season has progressed as her head coach. What have you seen from her heading down the home stretch here?
Well, number one thing right now, of course, is she's healthy. She's not no nagging injuries. She's really pitching healthy. And then, of course, she's just a great all-around pitcher because she's got a great drop ball. She's got a great rise ball. She's using her off-speed more effectively all the time. It just keeps getting better. And then she's added in a curveball. So what I'm seeing is a kid that can match up a lot of different ways. She can reinvent herself from after game one into game two. She can pitch totally different on the second day than she did on the first day. And so that makes us gives us a chance to go put her right back out there. And because she got four pitches, they can't set on one pitch or two pitches. They have to be guessing. And she's able to outcraft a lot of good hitters right now.
Coach, you had a nice moment over this past weekend, once again kind of honoring the past of this program's legacy when – obviously, Keeley Milligan set the new stolen base record for the season. And then the following day, you had the former Raging Cajun star who she surpassed there, and you had a nice ceremony there at home plate. Why was it so important to have that, and why is it so important for you as the head man here to continue honoring the past and the legacy of this program?
Well, you know, it's one of the most storied softball programs in the country. The history here is fascinating to a softball person like myself, and it's definitely rivals the past history of almost any program in the country. So we definitely want to keep that going. It's important, and then it's important to recognize your great players of the past. And I was very impressed that Dorsey was able to come back over and be here when Keeley broke the record and to share her stuff with her. And you know, Dorsey was an amazing athlete. So I was reading she still holds a record in the javelin throw, and she still holds a career stolen base record. And I thought that really spoke volumes about her and her love for the university and her love for the softball program here, that she come and spent the weekend with us and was able to be a part of it. And then it's just anything that we can do, it helps in recruiting. I'm always thinking about the recruiting side, but it was very important with Keeley that we break the record because I want fast kids to know they come here, I'm going to run. Right. I love to recruit speed, and that just helps me. It gives me another selling point. Hey, you know, I'm going to run. We've had kids steal 50 bases. Maybe she'll get 60. I'm thinking in my mind there's possibility she could even get up to 70. And so I want to accomplish, you know, as much as I can in the different areas of the game with our pitching. I'd like to see Summer lead the nation in wins this year. That gives me a good selling point when I go in and sit down on the couch with a star pitcher over the next couple of summers. And, you know, I think that part's important, that we acknowledge history and that we make, that we set new records and that we use the talent that we have. And it helps me in recruiting.
Coach, I know you were familiar with Keeley went with your time there as an assistant coach at Texas A&M. You knew what she could do on the base pass when she set the single season record for the Aggies as a true freshman. So you already were familiar with her, but did you anticipate her adjusting and kind of becoming part of this team so quickly and being so dominant on the base paths for the Raging Cajuns?
Yeah, I knew that she was, there was no doubt in my mind. I knew that it was critical to get her. We needed a leadoff hitter all year last year. My number one and number two goal was to get a leadoff hitter and to get a cleanup hitter. And you know, getting Keeley was just huge because I immediately I said, well, now we have our leadoff hitter. Let's get a cleanup hitter in here and an RBI person in middle of the order. And Keeley's just a very elite, elite base runner. When you steal 54 bases like she did at Texas A&M in the SEC and against that kind of competition, and in her sophomore year she led us in the leadoff position to the World Series. And we made it, I think her average was like 400 from April till the end of the season. And she's just a very talented player, and I had no doubt that she would want to have a – she was very motivated to have a great senior year.
Coach, let's talk a little bit about your final midweek game is against a pretty good ball club. This is a team that has been to NCAA regionals. They have the highest RPI of any of the teams remaining left on your schedule when you go to Ruston for the midweek game against Louisiana Tech. What are some of the challenges that you expect Louisiana Tech to provide, present to your team, rather?
You know, they're a very disciplined team. They're a very well-coached team, Coach Mark Montgomery. You know, they always play great defense. They're not going to make any mistakes to beat themselves. The pitching's very effective. They got good pitchers, good arms. They can change speeds with those two pitchers that they're going to throw at us. And I expect to see both pitchers. And then offensively, they got some really good hitters at the top of their lineup. So Summer's going to have to be on her A game. And then the atmosphere will be, I'm sure the fan base there will be pumped up about having Louisiana up there. And when you get into interstate rivalries, I always think records go out the window. It's going to be who competes the best that night, who plays the best on Wednesday night.
Coach, you'll wrap up the regular season at home this coming weekend with a three-game stand against Coastal Carolina, one of the better teams in the Sun Belt Conference. First question, what do you expect to see from Coastal when they come in? I know they're coming off a disappointing weekend, so they'll be motivated to get back on track. And also, are there any special events, anything that you guys have cooking up for the weekend that the folks need to know about?
Yeah, well, we got Senior Day on Sunday, and we'll, you know, the whole weekend will be a celebration of our seniors. But then, especially the pregame ceremony on Sunday will be, you know, a special moment, and it can get emotional, and that can be. I've seen that work against teams on Senior Day, so I might just see how they respond. We're going to let Allison DeVille start on Senior Day, so I'm excited about that. I think it'll be her first career start, and I might just see how our team responds to that as well. Coastal's going to come in. Nobody wants to see us go undefeated in the Sun Belt. None of the other Sun Belt teams do. Only our fans do. And so I think that's going to create an interesting dynamic. And I want our kids to play loose. I don't want them to think about it and start feeling the pressure of being undefeated in the Sun Belt. I want them to, you know, think in their mind mentally that they own the Sun Belt and play loose and carefree and with reckless abandon. And it'll be interesting to see if we can maintain that attitude and that type of play and not start feeling the pressure of the win streak.
Coach, we'll wrap it up with this. You guys set such high standards here with this program, and here you are, best start in Sun Belt history for any team, starting off 19-0 like you did. You've already wrapped up the regular season championship. You're ranked in the top 10 in the nation. But what do you want to see from your team heading down the stretch here with Tech this week in the midweek, Coastal, and then you wrap up the regular season on the road? What are you wanting to see from your team to finish strong and to close this out and build up that great momentum heading into the postseason?
Yeah, I want to see us play a level that can get us to the World Series. And I've said this since the day I got here. I really don't even care about the Sun Belt Championship. It's nice. I'm glad we got it. But that's not my goal. My goal is to coach a team that is capable of going to and winning the World Series. And that's what we build on. That's what we're trying to do in our practices. That's the goal of the program. And as I've said since I got here, if we do that, if we really get a good enough ball club, if we become disciplined enough, if we become confident enough to get to the World Series, then the Sun Belt Championships will take care of themselves, and we'll be okay in the Sun Belt Conference, obviously. But that's what I want to see. I want to see us play at a higher level than we played all year. I want to see us be even more disciplined. I want to see us make better softball decisions, and I want to see our players play hungry, you know, play with more passion, play with more pride, play with more desire and more concentration at any point in the season.
Coach, appreciate you making time for us. As always, best of luck to you and your girls the rest of the week.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us. Thank you for support of Raging Cajun Softball.
That's going to do it with our interview here with Coach Jerry Glasgow, head man in charge for the UL softball program.
We need to go to break here for RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has proclaimed the month of April as Safe Digging Month here in Louisiana as part of a nationwide safety awareness campaign to draw attention to the importance of safe digging. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface, guys. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or even a garden, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. That's why it's so important for everyone to dial 811 and call Louisiana One Call 2 days before they dig. You just tell the operator your address and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. It's simple, it's free, and it's the law. All diggers and demolishers are required to notify Louisiana One Call before they begin work. The law applies to individuals as well as contractors, municipalities, and others. Failure to call can subject the individual to fines and liability for damages to buried infrastructure. So call 811 and know what's below before you dig.
This weekend, we just didn't pitch good enough in the back end of each game. I thought the starters in game 2 and 3 gave us a chance to win. Jack threw well again. Brandon threw well again. Both times, we just let the game get away on the back end of the game. And that's kind of, you know, been our consistency throughout the year, especially with Bradford down with the UCL after game 3, is being able to handle the back end of the game. You know, we go there and we come back with nothing, and, you know, that hurts, but we got to move forward.
That was longtime head baseball coach of the Raging Cajuns, Tony Robichaux, discussing during his weekly press conference what occurred over the weekend in Arlington, where his Raging Cajun team, who had built up some momentum by taking 2 of 3 from South Al and then beating LSU in the Wally Ponoff Junior Classic, was swept. They will return to action tonight on the road in the Berg as they take on Southern Miss at 6 p.m. Tony talked about didn't pitch well enough in the back half to win ball games. They did have some of those games that they could have pulled out the victories and just let them slip through their grasp. And this is a team that has talent. There's talent on this roster. Hanson Monica has kind of returned to form. He's fully healthy now. You can tell just by the way he swings the bat. Hayden Cantrell, the former Tarlings Catholic star, has played very well this year, kind of coming into his own. Brennan Breaux has finally had the year that we all thought he could have when he was coming out of high school there at STM, where he's winning state championships. He started off his career at LSU, didn't work out. He saw limited playing time last year at UL, and now he's become a big factor for the Cajuns this year. But Gunnar Leje not being able to go, the guy, All-American candidate, not being able to go to be fully recovered from his not one but two off-season surgeries last year that derailed his whole season last year, and him having to be in the bullpen, it's kind of shook up the rotation, and pitching has been inconsistent for the Raging Cajuns this year. Right now, they're 3 games under .500 as they head into tonight's game at Southern Miss. A big thing that Tony talked about, and he's mentioned this throughout the season, but he brought it up again on Monday during his weekly press conference, was that they can't pitch away from that dreaded 3-run inning.
Could not pitch away from the 3-run inning. That's been the thing that's hurt us the most on the back end of the bullpen when we haven't pitched well, is we can't pitch away from the 3-run inning.
And that's something that's always been kind of Tony's mantra for as long as I've known him, you know, avoid that 3-run inning. It sounds simple, but yet the Cajuns were unable to do so.
To prove how difficult that can be in certain times, LSU is dealing with a very similar problem. When LSU gives up runs, they give up runs in bunches.
Correct.
And UL is the same way. And that's, as they say, the old adage, the crooked number on the scoreboard. You want to put those up. You want to avoid having those put up on you. And right now, LSU and UL both, when they give up runs, they're giving them up in bunches. When the pitching's on, it's on. So it's tough.
It's tough. And now they'll be traveling over to Mississippi to Hattiesburg to take on Conference USA foe and old rival in multiple sports, Southern Miss. They're at Pete Taylor Park. First pitch is slated for 6 p.m. tonight. The midweek contests have been kind to UL this year. Even though they may be 20-23 overall and 8-10 in conference play, the midweek game they've done well at. They're 8-5 overall, including beating LSU last Tuesday in the Wally Pauniff Junior Classic. And they're actually 5-2 in the midweek games on Tuesdays in particular, so that bodes well for them. UL did take the first meeting between the two teams back on March the 13th. That's when Colton Frank homered in the bottom of the 12th to seal the 6-5 victory. Very dramatic walk-off win.
UL was struggling at that point early in the season, too. It was a big win in the midweek.
A big turnaround for them. That was also the first homer of Frank's career. So we'll see. UL is yet to name the starting pitcher for the contest. That'll be likely done here in the next few hours. Southern Miss, meanwhile, 24-13 overall. They're a good ball club this year, 14-4 in Conference USA play. They entered the game on a three-game winning streak after they swept Charlotte in Hattiesburg over the weekend. The Golden Eagles are coming off a weekend where they outscored their opponents 29-10. So UL's pitchers better be ready to take on that. The Golden Eagles will throw Cody Carroll.
Cody Carroll, that's the seafood king of Pointe-Coupee Parish, I'm just saying.
First start of the season. He's appeared in 17 games, has pitched 32 innings, and has allowed 16 runs, 15 which were earned. He also has 37 strikeouts. This will be the 51st meeting between UL and Southern Miss on the diamond. The Raging Cajuns lead the all-time series 28-22 under head coach Tony Robichaud. The team is 18-18 against the Golden Eagles, including going 9-12 in Hattiesburg. So they struggle when they're on the road. Coach Robe talked about this series with Southern Miss yesterday.
Southern Miss always is a good baseball team, and we feel we are. You know, we are in a tough season this year. Everybody goes through some tough seasons. You want to try to minimize them to the best of your ability. But they're always a tough team. The crowd over there is always tough. So we've always liked going there because, it's one, it's a good series. They fight to try to keep their RPI up. So normally each year, scheduling is sometimes 2-3 years out. So you got to try to make sure that when you do schedule people, you got somebody that you think is going to have a good RPI, and they do a good job over there. So, and it's realistic, you know, driving distance for us. So it's just it's a good series. We enjoy playing them. They want to stay playing us, and we like it because it's two good programs, you know, that's got some history. And so it'll be a tough game. You know, it's a midweek game, but it'll be a tough game. They're playing well. They're playing better since they left us, and we're coming off a tough weekend. So, you know, we're going to have to sew ourselves up and get back out after it tomorrow.
And it was a tough weekend, and for the Raging Cajuns, a win against a very good Conference USA team tonight could give them the boost, so to speak, the shot in the arm that they may need after having kind of such a deflating weekend. This will be the final midweek contest for the Raging Cajuns this season. And if they can get a win tonight against the Golden Eagles, the Raging Cajuns, if they could do that, maybe that can give them a little bit of confidence heading into the weekend series versus Texas State, three-game stand, which will be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Then they go on the road to play at Coastal, which is going to be, you know, that's a national championship program there. And then versus Georgia State back at the Teague before wrapping up the regular season at ULM. So still some time for them to kind of ride the ship, so to speak, but they'll need to do so quickly. When we come back here on RP3 and Company live in studio, Church Point head softball coach Michael Hardy joins us right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also being simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1, the Stadium Network. It's time we welcome on our fourth and final guest of this Tuesday edition of RP3 and Company. He is the longtime head softball coach at Church Point High School. His squad went 15-13 overall this season after a slow start, and they've been hot as of late. They have knocked out three teams in the playoffs, including the 13 seed, the 4 seed, and the 5 seed, as they made their first quarterfinal trip since 1994 when Church Point was state runner-up in softball. They now will be playing in the semifinals on Friday at 1:30. They're at Frash Park on Field 15 as they take on the top seed, Brule. It's our privilege to welcome on Michael Hardy. Coach, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing great, Raymond. Thank you for the invitation.
Not a problem. Appreciate you making some time for us. I know it's a busy week for you and your program. Let's start right there. Look, you've been doing this a long time. You've been an assistant coach at multiple places. I want to say like New Iberia. You also were at STM. You were also an assistant coach for the Lotifs there at UL for a short time. You've been doing this a long time. How rewarding is this season for you as the head coach there at Church Point for you guys being able to do what you've been able to do so far?
Well, it's absolutely a dream come true. We had very little or no expectations of going into the playoff round. We ranked number 20, and we drew 13 right off the bat, and we went over and we played Iowa very well. And naturally, I kind of thought that would probably be the end of it, but kids played number 4 Crowley a week later and came up victorious, and God willing, somehow we beat Kaplan. And Kaplan's a perennial powerhouse. They're used to making it to the state playoff every year. Coach Shea is a great coach. He always puts together a fine squad. So I kind of feel like we've almost won the state tournament already.
I can understand. You still got a few games to go. You know, for you, Coach, as the head man, this is your 11th season there in charge there at Church Point. You know, you guys had never got past the second round. You always came up against, you know, some type of, you know, buzzsaw, a team that would make a run itself and play for a state championship. You know, this year, though, you guys were able to break through, so to speak. Like you said, you took out the 4 seed Crowley, who was a semifinalist a year ago, and then Kaplan is a perennial power themselves. You beat them in the quarterfinals to get to the semis. How impressed have you been with your team being able to break through like they have with this playoff run?
Well, it's more than impressed. It's more of a Cinderella story. We kind of came with a new approach. Our last regular season game was senior night. We played Abbeville. Abbeville came over, and Abbeville had only won a few games. But Abbeville, we run-ruled Abbeville, but Abbeville came out, and I've never seen children have so much fun losing a game. They worked hard. They hustled. They did everything right, and it was kind of a come-to-the-savior moment for us, and we regrouped, and you know what? We said, we want to play just like Abbeville, and we have. We've gone out there, and we've attacked every playoff game. We have fun. We hustle. We work from the first pitch to the last pitch. And we have no expectations except going out there and enjoying the ride and having a good time. And so far, it's worked.
Let's talk a little bit about this season in general. I know you said, you know, it started off 4-7, kind of a sluggish start to the year. You were able to overcome that. You know, what happened there early part of the season, Coach? Was it just the level of competition, or you guys were still kind of coming together and gelling as a team?
No, absolutely. We were gelling. We're only returning 4 starters, really 3.5. One of my starters was injured for 80% of the season last year. So we had no earthly idea who was going to step up and play. So every lineup was a different lineup. For the first probably quarter of the season, we had different kids in every position just trying to figure out what was going to work. And eventually we came to what we think was a pretty winning lineup, and we rode it for, you know, we had a 10-game winning streak after that. So, and actually I think we'd have continued winning, but our second baseman, who's been a key player for us all year, Mimi Jones, had to have surgery on her sinuses, and she was out for those 7 games, and we didn't win a game for seven games.
I guess that tells you how important she is to the ball club.
Absolutely. we ride Mimi and our little leadoff hitter, Haley Doucette. They score most of our runs. They're little slap hitters. They get on at least two out of three times, and they're responsible for scoring most of our runs this year. And they complement each other well. When one of them there, the system doesn't work.
Let's talk a little bit about a player we're talking with, longtime head coach of the Church Point softball team, Michael Hardy. Player that's really stepped up for you is a younger player, freshman. Your pitcher, Madison Frugier. Talk a little bit about her development, and did you think that she was going to become such a key player for you this year, Coach?
I had heard a lot about Maddie. I was expecting big things from her, but she's exceeded my expectations. She's a very, very disciplined little girl. She pitches a disciplined game. She makes very few mistakes. She's not overpowering. She throws the ball probably in the mid to lower 50s, but she hits her spots. She mixes the speeds up well. She tries to work ahead against the batters and then makes some fish after bad pitches, and it's worked well for the whole season.
Coach, what's been the reception like in the community? Church Point is such a small community, a small town atmosphere, but I would assume the reaction to you guys making this run has been kind of just over the moon, so to speak. Well, what are the folks in Church Point? How do they feel about what you guys are doing, and what's the reaction been?
Well, naturally, they're excited. It's a close-knit community. Church Point really, really gets behind their athletic teams, their programs. They're not only past alumni, they're financial supporters, they're friends of the kids and the programs and the coaches, and they are absolutely excited. After our game Saturday against Kaplan, I must have had 100 text messages from people I haven't heard from in years, local business owners and past alumni who wishing us good luck and offering congratulations.
Coach, has any of the team, the former team members, the coaching staff, or anyone from that team in 94, the last team to reach the quarterfinals or the semifinals, that team finished as state runner-up. Any of the members of that team or the coaching staff been reaching out to you during this run and congratulating you?
Not to my knowledge. That was 94 was before my days of softball. I think the head coach actually had passed away a couple of years ago. No, sir, they haven't.
For you guys have made this run. It's been so long for Church Point to have a season like they're having. I would anticipate that come Friday that are the plans in place to go ahead and just shut down the town on Friday for the whole town to come out and support you guys there in Silver? Because it's different this year, because in years past, it's always the fast pitch is always the quarterfinals on Friday and then semifinals and finals on Saturday. But this year, with the way the playoffs are now arranged, to get to Silver, you have to make it to the semis, which makes it even more special for you guys. So I would assume that there's going to be a lot of Church Point folks there in Silver come Friday.
Oh, I'm sure there will be. Church Point will be out in fine form to support us. I guarantee it. It was standing room only the other day at the high school game at our field against Kaplan. So I can only imagine how many of the community are going to be out there to watch us play.
For you, I have to ask you, Coach. I know you spent some time on the Raging Cajun softball staff, and you were an assistant on the team that went to the College World Series, the Women's College World Series. For you took part in that, but now here you are, the head man. You've been doing this for so long, a decade plus. Not too many people can say they've done both or had those kind of accomplishments. Personally, for you, I know you've been doing this a long time. You love coaching, but what has this meant to you?
Well, it's certainly a dream come true. This is my retirement year. The kids are sending me out in fine fashion. I do remember the college days. I can remember specifically beating Arizona when they were the defending national champion, 32-0. And I can tell you the win against Kaplan was just as rewarding. So it's been fun, and it is fun. I'm so proud of the children. They're really making sure that I have a great last year.
Are you changing your routine up? Because I know, baseball and softball, there's a lot of, you get into a routine. You guys kind of had a reset, so to speak, after the regular season finale where you guys changed things. you kind of had come to Jesus kind of meeting, as we used to call it, and you guys have reset. So are you changing that routine at all for this week because it's on the bigger stage, or are you just trying to keep things the same? What are you doing to kind of ensure that your kids aren't going to get too nervous?
Well, we are going to make some changes. I'm taking advice from Coach Herpin, Shea Herpin, who's been there, regularly for the last 10 or 15 years. We're going to noisen up the practice. I know for a fact Brulee's got a pitcher who's throwing flames. She's already signed at Southeastern as a pitcher. They've only got two losses, so we're going to have to prepare our children for 60-plus mile-an-hour pitcher. So that's kind of the plan this week. We've done it before in the past. I think we can have them ready for. So we've definitely got to pick up the pace and try to get more of the bats in the lineup than just my two slappers.
So, yes, you have your slappers, so you're trying to get some power in there. What do you know? You've had some time to kind of break down the tape, do a little scouting. You mentioned the star pitcher that's going to Southeastern. What are some other things that Brulee brings to the table that's going to be a challenge for your ball club come Friday, Coach?
I haven't been able to find a lot of teams that have played them that I'm familiar with. But anytime you have a pitcher that's signed at a Division I school, that's going to be who they're riding behind. The name of this game is fast pitch. And normally the best pitcher wins, unfortunately. But we're just going to find a way to score runs on them. I think their defense, according to my scouting reports, is very suspect. They're not used to having a lot of balls put in play. Okay. The kid strikes out, the majority of the lineup. So we've got to find a way to keep the ball on the ground and in the game.
Well, Coach, thank you for making some time for us. Congratulations on the terrific season and the accomplishment for you guys to reach the quarterfinals and the semifinals for the first time since 1994. Best of luck to you and your girls this Friday over in Sulphur. We appreciate you coming in, brother.
Thank you so much, Raymond. We appreciate it.
That is head coach Michael Hardy of Church Point High School. His team, the number 20 seed, mind you, is taking on the top seed this Friday at the state softball tournament on field 15 at 1:30 scheduled first pitch. So best of luck to Coach Hardy and his squad. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up today's show right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. Here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 on Stadium. I want to give big thanks to all of our guests today for coming on the show. Thad Dickey, longtime Bo Shan head softball coach. He woke up early with us this morning. He came on at 6:15. God bless him. Longtime Gators head coach came on, talked a little bit about his team breaking through for the first time, getting to the state semifinals. They'll be playing Friday there at the state tournament in Frash Park there in lovely Sulphur. Also want to thank Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast coming down, breaking down his thoughts on what the Saints will be doing this week for the NFL draft. First round will be Thursday night, by the way, just a reminder. Also, thanks to Jerry Glasgow for making time for us. As always, good interview with him about his Raging Cajuns wrapping up the regular season championship and locking up the best start ever in Sun Belt Conference history. And also a big hand to longtime Church Point head softball coach Michael Hardy. His team is into the state semifinals for the first time since 1994. They'll be playing Friday. They're going to be taking on the top seed in that bracket after knocking out the 13, the 4, and the 5 as a 20 seed. So thank you to all of our guests that came on today, especially Coach Hardy there who came in live.
Apparently, Coach Hardy and I, we know each other from somewhere.
Yes.
It's softball related. Yes, almost you, certainly yes, it's softball yes, related.
Both of you are like, we know each other. Where are you from? Yeah.
We certainly had that moment where everyone's had it where you see somebody come around the corner and we're a hallways apart from each other and we both sitting there awkwardly just staring at each other. Like, I know you? With upward inflection. Like I said, it's almost certainly softball related because it's come up before. I umpired softball for, three school seasons, four summer seasons, and he's coached softball, he's, for 20 years at this point, he said. So at some point, we have crossed paths. It was just funny, small world type of thing, you know. That's South Louisiana for you.
Yeah, South Louisiana, and especially with all of your kind of connections.
There are many layers to Cody Schutz.
There is many
say,
layers.
Raymond.
There are many there, layers. There are many later, layers to Cody Schutz. I want to go back to, we had a caller call in earlier. Couldn't get him on the air. Talked to him off the air. Cody.
Yeah, Raymond, our buddy Raymond called in. And
to be transparent, it was not me calling from outside the studio.
It wasn't.
In a disguised voice. No,
Raymond
this
called
is actually
in.
A legit caller. He calls routinely.
And this is specifically for Raymond there. He gets a personal shout out to say thank you because he put RP3 and Company over like I have never seen. I thought during the Alan Michael show, I was the king of putting people over. I made Alan Michael look so good on that show. But Raymond, I mean, he buried me by putting us over, if that makes any sense. He had nothing but great things to say about you and the show, Ray, and that was made my day. I'm going to ride that high for the rest of today. But he also brought up a sports topic because Raymond, diehard sports fan, diehard Saints fan. He calls all the time to ask about the Saints. And I guess this is a good spot to end the show because it is draft week. We'll put Avengers week to the side for now. It's draft week. And he said, you know, Bobby Hebert, the Cajun Cannon himself.
You own the cannon.
Is big time talking about the Saints packaging and trying to move into the first round. We heard at the beginning, it's a perfect way to end the show. We heard at the very beginning of the show, Mickey Loomis say, nah, not going to happen. We're staying right where we're at. We can get a great player there. But we've got Bobby Hebert, who we know has connections, saying that Andres Pete, another player in that second round pick, are being sent somewhere for a first rounder. Your thoughts, Raymundo?
If that's the case, if they're going to package, instead of getting multiple picks, if the game plan is to take Andres Pete, more than likely to the Raiders, is what we've been told. Now, he could be traded anywhere because there's a plethora of teams that need a starting guard. Regardless of how you feel about Andres in his performance, if you think he's been a little bit of a bust and injury prone or whatever it may be, starter is a starter, okay? So if the Saints are going to package him, their second-round pick, and you're saying another pick?
That is what Raymond told me Bobby Hebert was saying. Another player.
So Andres Pete, another player, and their second-round pick.
And we're assuming that player is going to be at the same caliber, at least, of Andres Pete.
Or he may be a backup. A backup linebacker or something like that. That tells me, if that's the case, that tells me there's a player in the first round that they desperately want to get their hands on that they feel can put them over the top to win a Super Bowl.
And
that's the only way you do that, just like they did it last year where they were high on Marcus Davenport. Now, I know some Saints fans were disappointed. I was not disappointed by Marcus Davenport's performance. Rookie pass rushers need time. He showed flashes of his ability of what he could do.
He was injured as well.
He was injured.
Don't forget the injury he had.
That's that good False River.
Calicapointcapete, get it straight. Calicapcbro, as the famous CD would say.
That said, you know, I think Davenport will make strides, and I think he's going to have a breakout year this year. But if that's what they're going to do and they're going to trade away a starting guard and another player, probably a backup, and a second-round pick to get into the first round, they're not getting a lineman, okay? Okay, they're not.
We're going skill position here, huh?
They're probably going to go skill position. They're probably going to target a wide receiver or a pass-rushing defensive end. That's what they'll probably do. If that's the case, I'm intrigued by that now. I'm intrigued by that. Hey, just a reminder, LSU's new athletic director having the press conference today at noon. Jordy Holberg from 2 to 4 and the good brother Ben Love from 4 to 6 is going to break that down for you live right here on 103.7 The Game. They'll have reaction and guests to talk about that. Also, reminder, pregame for LSU baseball versus Lamar tonight at 6 o'clock. First pitch, 6:30 right here on 103.7 The Game. Y'all have a great and safe day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.